It's Central Time. I'm Darrell Connor.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, last year, Apple became the first American company to be valued at $1 trillion. But so far, 2019 hasn't been so nice to them. We'll talk to a tech columnist about why you holding on to your iPhone a couple years longer and other changes in the market may spell bad news for Apple.
First, tourism is one of the biggest industries in the world, and it's getting bigger. The UN World Tourism Organization says that in 2017, there were more than 1.3 billion tourist arrivals around the globe, and tourism is estimated to support about 1 in 11 jobs around the world.
But more travelers bring often more challenges for tourist destinations. Local culture, the environment, and livability for permanent residents all get put under threat when an area becomes too popular.
Cities in Europe and elsewhere have even seen local residents protest the arrival of tourists. Our next guest says that government intervention is the only way to create lasting solutions to the problem of runaway tourism.
Elizabeth Becker is a journalist and the author of Overbooked, The Exploding Business of Travel and Tourism. She's a former senior foreign editor for NPR. Elizabeth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
Well, you wrote that book a few years ago about the exploding business of travel and tourism. What have the trends been like since 2013 or so?
Well, it's been more explosive than I had predicted. The biggest change that's new is the newest ingredient is Airbnb. That took off very quickly, and it's caused havoc around the world. Here in Washington, D.C., I don't know if you have it in Wisconsin, but here in Washington, San Francisco, New York, Vancouver, British Columbia, Rome, Paris, Bangkok, you name it. There's concern that Airbnb has gone around all the zoning rules that normally helps you maintain a mix of housing units and has skewed everything towards the tourists. So now you have cities like Barcelona closing down illegal Airbnbs daily in order to try to preserve something resembling local, affordable housing. That's the biggest big change.
There is often an attitude, and you've written about this, that once a city or a country brings in tourists, great, that's happy news. Let's just let those tourist dollars roll in and stop thinking about it. Is that a pretty common attitude for national and local governments?
That's sort of old school. That's starting to change because of two things. First, the over-tourism, the saturation has made people say, I'm sorry, but who's benefiting from this? It's certainly not me and it's not my community. And two, the consolidation in the tourism industry, like every industry, is becoming so stunning that the profits clearly aren't even resembling local profits, so that there's a tendency in many places to say, we don't want more tourists yet. Will you stop trying to encourage more tourists because we have to figure out how we could take care of the ones we have?
Let's look into some of the particular harms that you and many local leaders and residents are worried about. First of all, there's a concern about environmental damage, whether you're talking about in a city or a place with beautiful natural resources, the beaches, the natural heritage sites, things like that. What kind of environmental concerns do we have over tourism?
Well, first, looking at how do people arrive. If it's a lot of inexpensive airplanes, you're going to have air pollution. If it's a lot of inexpensive cruise ships, you're going to have water as well as air pollution. Then, if you're talking about the outdoors, you often have a beautiful scenic area where resorts are developed without understanding how you're going to wreck the environment. And then you don't have a sense of how many people can actually be accepted without turning the environment upside down. So you have places that advertise as ecotourism, but in fact they have completely distorted it. The good examples are countries like Costa Rica, which pioneered ecotourism and tries to be as careful as possible about maintaining the wildlife and still and the fauna and the flora while still making room for sensitive, responsible tourism.
Talking to Elizabeth Becker about the hazards of over-tourism in the United States and around the world. Another concern, Elizabeth, and you've already touched on this a little, is the idea that permanent residents are driven out of neighborhoods either because they're replaced by tourist resorts or they just can't afford to live in places anymore. What kind of things are you seeing?
Well, this is a big problem in the United States, and the tourist cities that have responded to this are Charleston, South Carolina, where they said we have to protect the historic city for the locals, and they have passed a pretty strong controlling of Airbnb, the daily rental companies that do very short-term rentals and thereby take out the not only the housing stock, but raise the rents. So if you keep that at a level that your community thinks is affordable, then you're going to keep the residents in. But if you don't, you end up like New Orleans, where the city had lots of demonstrations about the creeping Airbnb that were pushing people out of the French Quarter and a lot of the historic districts and turning it into an area where you couldn't afford to live anymore, and it was crowded with bars and t-shirt souvenir shops. So that is a big problem, and once it tips, it's very hard to reverse.
A case you've been making both in that book and since, and you're starting to see this happen now, is that these problems and the other risks of over-tourism, they're not going to be solved without government regulation, whether that's the city or at the national level. What kind of things are you seeing communities around the world do to try to get this under control?
What is so wonderful about travel and tourism is also what's so difficult about it, because we all want to go to a different place and experience a wonderful different environment and get to know different people and different cultures. But that's a sort of saturation. A visit touches on every part of a life. So a city will have to decide how can they keep the tourists down in a very total way. So that's zoning rules. That's keeping the number of tour buses down, keeping them out of certain parts of the city or the country. I've seen towns that refuse to enlarge their highways so that those tour buses can't go into their towns. There's cities that are, and small towns too, but tourist areas that will now start to put things on the historical registry to protect it. Fishing villages that don't want to become entirely tourists will protect their piers, protect the fishing areas. And so it's a combination of industrial regulation through zoning, controlling the ways in which people can come to visit, and also how long they can stay, again, the number of hotels, so on and so forth. And then there are some new smart use of technology to figure out carrying capacity. So how many people actually come to your city? Where do they go? Should we have new cultural venues for them here, there, everywhere? And how do we come up with that number where we find that golden mean where you are not going to have too many, but you're going to have enough to in fact, enrich the economy?
One concern people might have is that, okay, if you throttle down the number of people who can come into tourist area X, there are fewer opportunities. Maybe that drives up costs, and we go back to a situation where only the elite, only wealthier people have the opportunity to gain the benefits of travel. Is that something you worry about?
Not really. I went into this thinking exactly that. But in fact, that's not the case. The areas that keep a high quality standard do not lack for visitors, and what is really luxurious is so beyond any of our means that it's not a consideration. I mean, you have no idea how wealthy these people are and what they have. So, like for instance, Bhutan is often brought up because they require a minimum of $250 spent per day in visiting Bhutan. And you say, oh my God, who can afford that? Well, in fact, people can, and they have backpackers come. And they said to themselves as they developed this is an industry. We want it to nurture and protect our environment and our society and our culture. And we want people to see the real Bhutan, so we're not going to make it into a Disneyland, you know, free-for-all. It's worked. They have problems. Everybody's got problems. But they have maintained that, and it's worked to everybody's benefit. And I thought 250 was a lot. But then you look at it and look at the way other people spend money, and it's not a lot. So up front, it's really hard to detour people. And if you are serious about visiting an area, you can find a way to do it.
We're talking to Elizabeth Becker. She's a journalist and author of the book Overbooked, The Exploding Business of Travel and Tourism.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you seen the negative effects of overtourism in a place that you visited? When you travel, do you seek out the most famous destinations, or do you avoid crowded touristy places? If you live in a popular tourist spot like Wisconsin Dells or Door County, what's your experience been like? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Darrell Conner. Right now, we're picking up our talk with journalist and author Elizabeth Becker about the problem of overtourism and what can be done when a place gets too popular with travelers.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you traveled somewhere and seen the impact that maybe too much tourism has had? How do you seek out destinations that aren't touristy and overcrowded? Or if you live or have lived in an area that gets a lot of travelers coming in, do you think it's been a good thing overall? What do you think about the way your community dealt with the influx of tourists? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Tony is with us in Madison. Tony, hi. What have you seen?
Well, so I've traveled with my family. I have three kids, and we backpack quite a bit. So I've traveled around the country and gone as far as the Himalayas. And I see the effects of over-tourism. And I see the effects it has on sanitation and stuff in third world countries. And to me, that's the biggest question. But on the side with money, it's because I'm a working class guy. For us to go out of country, it has to be something in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 per person per day, not the $250 in Bhutan or any of those locales. Those are really just the high-end people, the high-end backpackers that can manage those.
Tony, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing that. His first point, Elizabeth, about sanitation facilities being able to handle that influx of tourists. I could see two options. The local place builds up their infrastructure to accommodate all the travelers coming in, or they do what you were talking about earlier and dial back the number of travelers coming in so they don't put a strain on their local facilities.
Well, in fact, the answer is all of the above. One of the reasons why Bhutan has charged this much money, and I'm wondering if Tony went to Nepal, where he saw the garbage and the sanitation, because Nepal has not charged the money, and it has resulted in a lack of infrastructure and garbage and things. So I think there can be an in-between, and in a developing country like Bhutan or Nepal, you're going to have a different response than in a country that already has the infrastructure. So I'm very sympathetic to a country that wants the tourists to help them develop the good sanitation, the good roadways, and so on and so forth. But I also understand that there are alternatives, and I'm glad that Tony and his family are finding them, and they are in both Asia and in Europe and in Africa and South America.
Happy travels, Tony. We'll go next to Matthew in Blue Mounds. Matthew, hi.
Hi, good afternoon.
What have you seen, Matthew, when you've been out touring?
Well, last year I took my family to Cuba when it was available to go on a non-charter group, and we had we went to Havana, and Havana was a great. It was a large enough city that it could accommodate the amount of tourists coming in. But then we went to Trinidad, which was the sugar capital, and it was a smaller community, and it was just overwhelmed by the tour buses, and it was not much of a pleasurable experience due to the fact that you walk down the main street, and it was just inundated with a lot of Americans, a lot of Europeans, and we find that it was not an enjoyable experience. And we were trying to find unique places and get off the beaten track. And every place we went, there was just more people than was acceptable for us. And the community was looking for those tourist dollars, but they were in a catch-22 scenario.
Matthew, thanks a lot for the call. And there's the irony, Elizabeth, over-tourism makes tourism less fun.
No, and you and the caller captured it beautifully, because I can see the crowds and I can see the confusion and no one is happy. And I doubt that the community made much money from it. The tour guides and the tour bus made some money, but I doubt that there was many coffee shops that made money. And the only thing I can suggest for the tourist, this is separate from the community, is that I'm afraid nowadays you're going to have to do a lot more homework. And if you have a good agent that you could, a travel agent, I've become a big fan of good travel agents, because they can steer you to a good place and a good way to make those trips and avoid those overcrowded places. And for the communities, they have to start saying, I'm sorry, we can't have this number of tour buses. We can't do it. We have to say on our own that we're going to have this kind of a community with this kind of options. And unfortunately, most of those decisions are not made locally. So I'm sure the tour buses into Trinidad, those were sent from Havana.
Talking to Elizabeth Becker, author and journalist, talking about the problems of over-tourism and what communities and tourists can do to try to get them under control. We'll go back to your calls now. Marcus is on the line in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
Okay, so I guess I heard the last caller say a catch-22. I guess I have another question that might be a catch-22. If you start building up the infrastructure of locales around the world and start trying to modernize it, don't you run the risk of that you actually take and change the very fundamental nature of where you're going to be going? And so it's going to stop feeling like you're going to a foreign country or a foreign destination, and it'll start feeling more like you're walking in a metropolitan area in the States or in a national park.
That is overall an issue everywhere, but I don't think the infrastructure itself is what's going to homogenize things. Homogeneity in tourism is a huge problem, and it's called Disneyfication, where you can't tell which city you're at because it's the same standard issue hotel or motel. It's the same standard issue cafe, different name. Infrastructure, I don't think, is going to be the issue. And protecting the culture and the foreignness of a place is at the root of the problem of over-tourism. Pretty soon, you're essentially selling, if you don't watch it, you're turning yourself and your community into a commodity, so that you're wearing your native dress in order to have your picture taken with a tourist, and then you charge them $25. Or you have your national dance that you dumb down so that a tourist can watch it for 10 minutes and not get bored. The list goes on and on. So that's a very serious issue that you put your finger on.
Thanks a lot for the call. Marcus, Sabrina joins us now from Baraboo. What do you see, Sabrina?
Hi. You guys are talking about this. I live in the Baraboo Dells area. I don't see a lot of this going on in the Dells, but definitely the natural areas in Baraboo, like Dewards Glen, some of the state-protected areas. I see a lot of overuse, especially by people who really don't appreciate the area or respect it, leaving trash, going off trails, and leaving it kind of trashed.
Thanks for the call, Sabrina. How can the managers of a natural area like that and, of course, the users of a natural area take better care, Elizabeth?
I think you sort of look at it as if it's your house and you're having a dinner party and you're inviting 12 people and 12,000 show up and that can't go on. So your natural area, you get serious. You demand respect by saying we can only have X number of people. They have to follow these rules. These rules are posted everywhere. There are fines. It's a normal, regular behavior. Respect us. Make sure that you don't trash. And if you're caught, you're in trouble. I think it's just that basic.
Thanks a lot for the call. Time for another caller. Louise is with us in Dodgeville. What's your experience been, Louise?
My husband and I went to Iceland last summer, and we experienced, because of their economic problems, they're trying to kind of make a comeback on tourism. So we were kind of trying to get a lot of the natural beauty, you know, the splendor which Iceland has, stunning. But we were always fighting with the tour buses, and because of it's an island, volcanic island, there's like one main road on the outskirt of the island, so everyone ends up on the same road, and we were just kind of uninformed and surprised by that. And we ended up staying at a bed and breakfast that advertised itself as a hotel, but it was really just somebody's house, and they had taken out extra bedrooms, and it turned out to be a really good experience, but we were kind of baffled when we arrived at this place, too. And again, I think someone's just trying to take advantage of the tourism dollars.
Sure.
But,
Louise, thanks a lot for the call. Elizabeth, I'm jumping in. You've written about Iceland some in particular.
Well, it's it overdid it. They have bottlenecks that they shouldn't have. And I would stay away, as a tourist, as a visitor, I would stay away from places like Iceland until they figured out how to control it. And again, everyone has to do much more homework. It's so easy to travel now. The prices are relatively low. Since globalization, we've all been able to go pretty much where we want to if we watch our pennies. But it's almost too easy, so we should be harder on ourselves, make more demands before we go, and don't expect things to work perfectly, but do your homework so you avoid the Icelands.
In our last few moments, Elizabeth, are you seeing a positive trend from tourists and from tourist areas?
Oh, yes. When my book first came out, people weren't quite sure what in the world I was talking about. And now tourist areas are not afraid to challenge assumptions. They demand to know who's benefiting from all this crowding. They are starting to say, well, listen, if this is a regular industry, we should ask of it what we would ask if oil drilling wanted to come in. People want to know how tourism is going to help them, and there are really new models of how to do it around the world, different cities, different nature areas. So there's a lot of positive to all of this.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Elizabeth Becker is a journalist and the author of Overbooked, The Exploding Business of Travel and Tourism. She joins to talk about how many popular destinations are dealing with the issue of just too many travelers.